dash colon colon tilde colon tilde colon colon tilde colon. Welcome to Command Control Power, a weekly podcast hosted by three certified members of the Apple Consultants Network, drawing from over 30 years combined experience. We talk shop, interview vendors and colleagues, and share what we've learned while operating our technology consulting practices. This is Joe Saponari of CIMAC, and my two co-hosts are Sam Valencia of the HCS Technology Group and Jerry Zygmunt of MacWorks. We are live at commandcontrolpower.com, the first Tuesday of every month, where new episodes are posted weekly. Thanks for listening.
This episode of Command Control Power is sponsored by Watchman Monitoring. Watchman Monitoring is your gateway to managed services.
The cloud. Tell me about the cloud. Sam, you've always joked about clients pointing up, you know, looking up and talking about the cloud. Like, what's, should I be
that
going
they
on
do,
the cloud?
Yes. You know?
And nobody quite understands about the cloud. I got started in this business about 15 years ago. I started my company 13 years ago. That makes me kind of an old guy in this industry. We're a little bit sort of, skeptical of the cloud. Is that fair to say?
I think I have been over the years, sure.
Yeah, right? I mean, like, we've been doing this long enough to kind of, the cloud comes in and it's just a big marketing push behind it. And there's a lot of benefits to cloud hosting of various services, but there's also a lot of benefits to hosting it yourself. And I've always just erred on the side of better security, privacy. I don't want Google having all my data and all that. But I've been rethinking things because we've had some internet issues in the last few months. And we're hosting our own mail server on our internet connection. So when we have an internet outage, we have an email outage. And we have backup. I had a free legacy like Google hosting account that I was using as essentially just a forwarding account. I had as my second priority MX records pointing to Google. So if our server was down, mail would flow over to Google, and Google was configured to just basically forward it to me, to my personal email address, so that I would still receive it and not, we wouldn't miss anything. But that's meant to be like in a pinch, quick outages and short outages, not like a permanent solution where we have a lot of repeated outages. Just wasn't, we can't handle that. It's just, there's no room for this kind of thing. Not only better uptime, but I just think it's great to just like have your email hosted by a company that specializes in doing that, as opposed to like me trying to do it myself on my Mac Mini.
Sam, this is breaking news to Joe Saponari.
Have you guys heard about the cloud?
Give him time, Jerry. Give him time.
Newsflash, hosted email.
Yeah, I mean, there's entire industries. I don't know if you guys know this, but there's like entire industries around hosting stuff in the cloud. So I kind of finally saw the light. I'm just like, piece by piece, I'm slowly migrating our infrastructure over to cloud.
Can I say something? For 4 years, we've been trying to get you here, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, I appreciate all the, gentle encouragement over time, but I'm finally ready to do it. And so I
grab that Cario mail server from his cold, dead hands.
Right, I know. It's been interesting. So I decided to switch over to G Suite, to Google's hosting service. They used to call it Google Apps. It's been a little rough. There are certain features of good old Cario that, Google doesn't have, like the ability to delegate specific mailboxes to other people and just have those show up in your IMAP folders or, using your ActiveSync connection. Google doesn't support that. You can delegate your entire scope of your inbox and sent and all your other folders and things. You can do that, but it's like all or nothing. That's like one limitation with Google. It's maybe a minor thing for people.
So just for clarity's sake, you would have a folder in your inbox, for instance, or a subfolder called staff. And with your Cario mail server, you were able to push that out to the people on your team and share that mailbox.
Yeah, exactly. So, that type of usage, or if I just want to share my inbox and, have or certain folders, like, our workflow with right. Judy is she has access to my inbox, so she can see if something's sitting there while I'm on site for 4 hours, that needs to be dealt with. Furthermore, she can see it right in her mail app, she can click on that folder, Joe inbox, and see, for that matter, I have access to her inbox. If she's out for a day, I can, I can just keep an eye on things. So that was really nice and clean. And that's kind of like works the way my mind works. I just thought that was a nice feature. And I was like surprised that that was not a feature in G Suite. You delegate the whole mailbox. So now when you can only get it through the web, you log into your account through, through basically Gmail. So I'm logged into my account. If Judy has delegated her mailbox to me, I see her name in the top right, just like where you see other people's accounts or other accounts of your own, you know, it just shows there as like a delegate. And I can click on Judy and I can see her entire mail, you know, inbox and send and everything else. Okay, that, you know, that works, but like I have to go in there and check it, and it's not really the, you know, my preferred way to do email, but nonetheless, it's there, you know. So it's just like little gotchas like that. The biggest nightmare that I've been through, this, I had, it took me 3 tries to get the calendars migrated properly. You know, so I, first of all, to back up, for email, it's pretty easy. I used Migration Wiz and I just migrated from Carrio, you know, via IMAP to you know, G Suite. And that works pretty well, like you'd expect. So that was pretty smooth, but there's no way to migrate Carrio, you know, calendars from CalDAV. There's no better way that I could see to migrate calendars to Google Calendar. So I, you know, luckily in the calendar app, you can export one by one. So of course I started off by doing that, backed up the whole database, you know, did it using various ways. And then I thought, let me just, you know, drop and drag and drop this in, essentially. Let me just try and move, you know, move this entire calendar over to Google. And the calendar app, you know, just chokes and unexpectedly quits at various times. And I should have known that that would happen. I've had that happen with, you know, client imports. So it should not have been a surprise, but that was my first attempt and that did not work. Then I thought, well, I've got most of these uploaded. What if I now use Google to just import, you know, in their web interface, you can go in and just import. Have you guys used that feature in Google in Calendar?
I don't think I have, no.
It'll just pull in an ICS file, you know, in theory. So you just go in and you say import calendar. It's under like other calendars on the left, and you select your ICS file and you select which calendar you want it to be imported into. So great. It, you know, it's exactly what I want. So I did that. We're talking about years and years and years worth of events, but not every calendar is massive, you know? So a couple of our calendar categories are like under a meg and, you know, but some of them are like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 megabytes of like calendar data going back for 13 years. You know, what I noticed with Google is that basically almost all of them would fail. So I'd go in via the web and I'd go to import. I'd select the ICS file, select which calendar to import to. It would basically do nothing for a few minutes. Like no, it wouldn't even update the interface when I clicked import. I assume just like uploading the file. And then like it results a couple minutes later in this thing that just says, "We're sorry, Google Calendar is temporarily unavailable."
<It's> like, sorry.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. Favorite. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, this is not a good sign. You know, like you say, you know, I click import, nothing happens. 2 minutes later or thereabouts, "We're sorry." You know, so that's just like a bad response. So I had a couple of those. Now I'm like, all right, well, I don't know what worked and what didn't. I've got these partial uploads, partial imports. This is just a complete nightmare. So that was like my first attempt. I ended up going in and wiping out all the events and all the calendars. You know, and I thought, well, this will be easier than recreating all these separate calendars and reconfiguring all the sharing settings for each person. Like I'll just go in and I'll wipe out all the events in the calendars. And I did that using BusyCal. So this BusyCal became a really important tool to this whole thing. But one of the features they have is you can show everything in a list format. Have you guys used BusyCal? We had
John Chafee. When you're saying you wiped out all the calendars, now you're speaking to the fact that you've got BusyCal configured now to talk to your new Gmail CalDAV server. You're wiping it out and you're trying it again. And BusyCal has been the platform for you to now do this.
Exactly right. So this became like a very important tool in this whole process because I could go in to list view. This is like a really powerful view in BusyCal. You know, day, week, month, year. Great. Everybody has that. Click on list and then you can actually click on the little pop-up menu toward the upper right side and go to like custom. So you can see, you know, list view of the day, list view of the week and so on. And you can choose custom and then you can set up the custom list view to show as many days as you want. I think, I don't know if this is the maximum, but I put in 9,999 days.
Why didn't you just go for 10,000?
I don't know. I think I actually discovered this at one point that like this was the maximum. I'm not going to mess with this and try this right now, but I'm pretty sure that that's like the max range. That effectively shows every event in the calendar. So I went through the Google calendars, one calendar turned on at a time with that view selected, and I kind of just did a select all and delete. And the range was encompassing like 1991 to end of 2018 or, you know, some range similar to that. So I went through and, you know, select all, delete, and then it just kind of like takes a while to chew through that. So you see the spinning icon in BusyCal go on for a while. I thought that would save me time. I thought I could just like select all and delete and walk away and come back and it's good. But I had to wait like hours for it to actually like tell me it was kind of like finished doing that. Then you go in and you have to actually delete them. Well, you don't have to, but I thought it'd be better to do this, to go into the Google Calendar, and then you can like select that calendar and view trash. So now your like deleted events are actually in a trash associated with that calendar. So I had to go in there and like just say empty trash for each calendar. So long story short, I did all of this cleanup to reset things, and I started.
Sounds like it would have been a little bit easier to just to change your company name and start out with a new account.
Right. Well, I definitely regretted like trying to do this, you know, in theory, like the easier way, and then it just was not. You know, I had to just wait so long, and I was never really sure how thorough it was. So I got it all to the point where it was all cleaned up. And then I thought, let me just focus my efforts now on BusyCal, because, you know, I didn't have any luck in the Google interface. I'm getting this "we're sorry" message, you know, calendar, forget it. I'm not going to even, you know, mess with that. And furthermore, BusyCal gives you like a list, you know, this list view, and I can select a subset and kind of drag and drop, and I can massage the data. It was really handy. So what I found was I could like import the calendar, and it would show up under the On My Mac section. So if you just go to File, Import, it shows up under On My Mac. So it's a nice local calendar. So there's no syncing. You know, you're not worried about server stuff corrupting events and whatever. You just have it there as this individual calendar. And I don't know why I thought this would be the best way to do it. From that view, I selected all the events in that list view, and I just basically dragged and dropped them as like a big chunk of events over to the calendar that I wanted those events to go onto. And I'd repeated this like for every calendar. You know, I have like 5 or 6 calendars. I have, you know, a separate calendar for remote, separate calendar for onsite, separate calendar for labor. And this is just historically the way I had done it. And then like, you know, Tim has a calendar, Judy has a calendar, and so on. So we have all these different calendars, and I did this one by one, drag and drop. Now, the thing I loved about BusyCal in this process was it just worked. Like, I mean, apparently it just worked. It was just like you'd see the spinning going on, spin, 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 spin. Finally, the spinning stops and no errors, you know, didn't crash. Everything seemed like it was fine. So I thought, great, I got the calendar migrated. This is awesome. Then I find out, Tim points out to me, hey, like, what's going on with the calendar? I'm like, oh, yeah, it should all be good. You know, great success. Well, he's like, I don't know. I'm definitely not seeing, like, you know, certain events. And he's pointing out a few. And it's not only is it like an entire calendar's missing, but it's random stuff missing. So that's like, yeah. And then you just, okay, well, we can confirm there's like 2 events that we can obviously see that are not here. And like, so that just tells me forget the whole thing. So great, I'm back to the drawing board. Well, I learned my lesson the first time around. I'm not going to use BusyCal to you know, wipe out the whole thing one by one. I'm just going to go into Google, delete the calendars. So for your own individual calendar, your primary calendar, you can't delete it, but you can go in and say delete all events on this calendar. So I did that. You know, I just like basically used Google to empty out all the events on our primary calendars. And the rest of the shared calendars, I had to go in and actually just delete them, delete the calendar entirely, and then recreate all the sharing. So I did all that. This is now my second clean start, my third attempt at migration. And I thought, well, I have to write off BusyCal now, because that's just not, you know, if it's not going to give me an error, but it's not going to work, that's just totally unreliable. So wasn't using BusyCal for this purpose, but it was still very important to the process. So I went back to, I thought, you know, I really want to import this ICS file to Google directly. Like, that's the last possible chance. You know, I don't know what else I would do besides like dragging, dropping, you know, 20 events at a time in BusyCal and just spot checking it. So I've got to make this Google thing work. So I figured what I could do is use BusyCal to import each of these calendars locally again, and then like select a subset of events, like maybe 1 year at a time or whatever amount of events results in a calendar file that's small enough. But this would have been dozens upon dozens of calendar ICS files. So I just did a couple of tests first. So I split it into like somewhat reasonable chunks, like a megabyte or two. And I just uploaded to Google. And sure enough, it gives me the same message. If they were in the range of like above a megabyte, I would very reliably get this message. We're sorry, Google Calendar is temporarily unavailable. That's like after you tell it to import. But, you know, actually that means in Google parlance, like, hey, great success. Everything worked fine. The way I've confirmed that everything worked fine was in BusyCal. So after dragging and dropping the ICS file into Google Calendar, you know, using the web interface and getting the error message, I went back to BusyCal and I refreshed my calendars. And, you know, Google would spin and, you know, for a few minutes or maybe, you know, 10 or 20 minutes in some cases, and then it would just be up to date. I'd go and I'd show just the events for that Google calendar on the server, and I would get a count as to the number of events on Google. And then I'd compare that to the number of events in the local calendar, you know, in BusyCal, also in List View, on my Mac section. And in every case, even though Google said it failed, you know, or said they're sorry, it actually was this right number of events. The maximum size of my files were like 2 megabytes. So I did split it up into like smaller chunks, not anything smaller than that. Some of the smaller ones, if they were on the order of like 700 to 900 kilobytes or you know, less than that, then they actually gave me valid responses. Like Google would say, processed, you know, 1,598 events, successfully imported 1,598 events. So I did get valid feedback when the chunks of data were small enough. They just clearly don't, they're not, you know, expecting, I guess, you to upload 2 or 3 years worth of events at a time, it seems.
I've found that no program I work with on the Apple side, at least, can handle more than a couple years of data. Just by judging your story there, it seems that's very common. Once it gets past that, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, I mean, you were very tenacious with this, and that won out because eventually you had success.
Great success, Jerry.
Yeah.
Great success.
But, you know, me hearing this story, I mean, I'd be, you know, weeping and bleeding from the eyes. And it sounds horrible. But
I haven't gotten a lot of sleep lately. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. This sounds like hours and hours of tedium.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it's just imagine staring at a screen, dragging and dropping, and the hours are getting late. BusyCal has this thing, too, where drag and drop, like, target is, like, slightly off. And, you know, this is probably a bug I could file because it seems pretty repeatable to me. But if your pointer, the active, you know, whatever they call the point of the pointer, that pixel, like, if that gets more than halfway down one of the calendars, it activates the next calendar. So as I'm dragging and dropping, I'm like, you know, at one point I dropped in the wrong calendar. I'm like, you know, expletives are flying.
Just like this, I can only
like,
imagine. Great,
you know, like, what did I just do? Like, I just dumped somebody's events doubling up into some other person's calendar. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, so they need to enlarge that target point so that you're not, that sounds really rough.
But also, like, just better yet, tell me when it's failing. Like, if I say import this whole calendar to this target, it just, like, spins and spins and spins, and then it just sits there happily. You know, we operate on the principle no news is good news, usually, you know? Like, right? It's like running a terminal command, you know? If you don't get an error, like, you can pretty much assume that the thing you told it to do happened. But, like, for them to not say, hey, like, we choked on 400 of your events, I hope. I don't know what you would do, but at least you'd know that there's a problem, right?
Well, you made the right choice because you were using the web interface. And if I had to think this through, I mean, that's about as close to the metal, the Google server as you can get. So that I was initially surprised because I thought your story was going to go the way of using BusyCal as the conduit to push the data forward. But it sounds like the win here was dealing with the web interface and just importing the calendars through Google.
You're exactly right. That was my theory too. Once they had the file, you know, like once you click import and like the data is transferred, I figure like then it's on them, you know, they can handle it.
Yeah. And you were highly motivated because you hosted all this data in-house. You weren't necessarily going to offload it to a service because as you were telling this story, I was thinking to myself that I would never want to go through this with a client. And most recently, we migrated a law firm using Rackspace. And before we even started the project, I said, we're going to use their concierge service. We're going to let them worry about it. Take such a burden as a consultant off your back. You just sort of build that into your cost or you build that into the client expectation. Like, look, this is what Rackspace does. We're going to have them do, you know, move the calendars, move the contacts, move the mail, and we're going to be able to log into the web view on Rackspace. So we're going to make sure that everything's there. And if it's not all there, then we go back to them and, you know, they take a second pass or they revisit it. You know, they're the ones that are responsible before you make that final MX record cutover. And I like that.
For sure. Yeah, they use MigrationWiz for, I think, on the back end, you know, but like Rackspace has like a license or something for it.
You can do that yourself through the Rackspace portal. And I don't want to misconstrue that. But then there's another service that they have where you just say, they have a whole migration team, and you just give the responsibility to them. And I think, you know, Joe, in your case, or even in people who are listening who have these clients with these, you know, kooky mail servers, and all of a sudden, you know, if things don't go well, you're fighting some sort of a black box that they were using originally as their mail service provider. So rather than do all that, just let somebody else worry about that.
Oh, you know? Believe me, I wanted to. It's like, can someone else do this for me? Like, I
could have hired one of us.
Somebody, I know. Well, what's the thing? Like, this is something that occurred to me. We all have this thing, I think, where either you get questions from family members, parents of, you know, could be aunts and uncles or friends, you know, and I'm thinking about this
for myself. Could it be second cousins, Joe?
Second cousins, even. Yeah, let's go down the list of family, third cousins. Or for ourselves, like, we're trying to decide, like, what's best, you know, what advice would we give ourselves if we were the client asking us for advice? And I feel like there's like a blockage in that, isn't there? Like,
but what's the question?
So, like, the question is, like, what service should I use for hosting my data? And then, like, the next question is, what is the best way to go about migrating all this data?
Listen.
If I had done this for a client, I would have fired myself. Like, this took way too long. It was too complicated. We had downtime, you know, just in, like, where we didn't have access to our calendar for, like, a day or two. We couldn't really make changes effectively and things like that. We just were stuck, you know? This would have been a thing that went sideways if I was doing this for a client. Why did I let myself get into this mess? Because I didn't stop and do it the way I would have done it for a client, I guess.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you just kept at it, kept plowing your head down and just trying to do whatever you could. Whereas with a client, you may have stopped and collected yourself and perhaps looked for support and other methods or something.
Yeah. Well,
is that what you're saying?
Yeah, kind of. And I also realized I probably would have said to a client, this is way too much data. You can't keep 15 years of calendar data in the calendar app. Like, you're never, you know, like, I wouldn't have, like, taken on the project, I think.
Not to ring Rackspace's chime, because they have their issues in working with this most recent project that I mentioned. They were a little slow to respond. But the great thing is that the very last thing you do when you have them migrated, that's the very last thing you do is move the MX records. So during this whole period, the client has no interruption in service. They keep on making their calendar entries. They keep on making their contacts, doing whatever they need to do. And Rackspace just goes back and keeps on, you know, making passes on whatever data they're pulling over until the client can log in and make sure, then say, like, yep, I see all my contacts, all 6,000 contacts, and yep, there's all my calendar dates, everything looks cool. So Rackspace is basically, you know, $10 per person for exchange with no minimum. So you could have an exchange client with one mailbox for $10 a month. I think it just went up to $12 a month, and that's it. And then if you want to just have them do IMAP, they have a minimum of 5 users, but their IMAP rates are like $2 a mailbox.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think the difference is that the source has to be supported. Like, they can't, I don't think Rackspace or MigrationWiz can migrate like calendars or contacts from anything but Exchange, it seems to me.
That's the case. It's different with every single consultant. But in my case, having that as being the go-to solution sort of takes the heat off of me.
Oh, I completely agree. For a client, like, I would have much rather have said, these people do this, and they'd probably do it way cheaper, for that matter, than I would do it. Totally agree with you there. But I think there's no way to migrate a generic, you know, CalDAV, CardDAV. We've been through this with clients who've been using the calendar for a very long time and, you know, using it for business and have a ton of events. And we've advised them, we're going to keep everything prior to whatever year, we're going to upload only most recent 2 years to the server. You know, just to get around that kind of issue. But for me, you know, I'm like, I get to have what I want. You know, I'm the consultant. I can brute force, you know, figure this out. And yeah, that's, you know, this is the result. But of course, like you said earlier, Jerry, I mean, I did extremely tenacious because it's my own stuff. And I figure, like, I'm only going to do this once. Once it's there, it's there. And I just want to have it all there, you know, so I'll figure it out. It was rough. It was very rough. Just to circle back to BusyCal, because it was, you know, I did have some criticism of it. I would create multiple local calendars. So I have all my historical appointments, let's say I group them all together and they're all in one calendar going back to, you know, 2004. What I could do is I was able to select like all the, you know, recent, every event from January 1st, 2017 until into the future, move those to a different local calendar. and then take everything from like, you know, 2014 and 2015 or and 16 and put that into another local calendar and so on. And like basically break it up into a series of local calendars, export each of those local calendars as an ICS file. So BusyCal was really good about like processing all these events. I don't know of any other way to do that, you know, any other tools that do that. So that was really handy. And then that's how I was able to upload to Google like smaller chunks of data. And the end result, I kind of left this out, but basically like we each have now just one main calendar for everything that's like 2017 and future. And then an archive calendar with all the old stuff. And in my case, I have a couple different categories because I just historically had those different categories. But that's our solution, hopefully, to the inconsistency we've had lately with syncing. Like we've had events, you know, fail to sync or, you know, updates get clobbered. Like, you know, somebody adds a bunch of notes to the notes field and then all of a sudden all those notes go missing and we don't know why. You know, you can understand that if somebody else opens the event that they have read-write access to and like maybe obviously if they make a change, it's gonna clobber the first person's change before it's synced, you know. But there's that would happen in cases we couldn't explain. You know, we're refreshing like almost, you know, like neurotically, like we're like command R, you know, refreshing constantly before and after every change. And we still were not having good success with the calendar. So I thought it's probably because we've got megabytes worth of old data in like each of these calendars. So we split it into like a current main calendar and then an archival calendar.
And that's still the process that you're working with going forward. You have a lighter calendar that has more current dates on it. And then you have this archive one that's on Google now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're both on Google. It still has to sync, but like, I guess ideally the historical one won't get touched and won't like have to sync and won't bog the system down. That's my theory.
Or as our clients would say, on the Google. I think it's really important to set expectations for most of what you're trying to do in terms of migration. Don't try to take it on yourself. If you can offload it to a service like that, it's worth the headache to have somebody else do it. And then, you know, as Joe pointed out, if you can't migrate calendar and contacts, then you tell the client that you are going to do it. You're going to take on that job and it's going to be best effort. It may end up being something where that you can't somehow shoehorn those old calendar archives onto, for instance, Google, if you were going to be using that as your mail service. And you may just have to use a tool like BusyCal and create, as Joe did, a local archive calendar and maybe just have that on several like Office Macs and say, well, you know, when you need to look up historical dates, you go to this Mac and this one has the archival calendar and it's just a locally based calendar.
Exactly. Which is, we've done that for a couple clients, but that's definitely after having gone through this, you know, that's going to be our standard recommendation at this point, you know, with old data. I had a couple of gripes about Google. Do you guys want to hear those? And then I know, Sam, you have your own story to match mine of the hellish experience.
To hell and back, recently. Joe, yeah. To hell and back.
At least we're back. That's a good thing. Right?
Yeah.
One criticism, which I think is not that valid, but you know, I was going to say the Google Calendar, how is it not Retina? Like there's like the interface arrows are like blurry, but I'm talking about the old Google Calendar. I guess it's old now because they have this new Google Calendar interface, but the old one is still like in effect. I don't think they've officially flipped the switch and like everybody's on the new calendar yet. So the new calendar looks much nicer. I definitely appreciate that. But the old one still has like non-Retina buttons in it and things. It's just like, how do they?
It's still in beta. That's why.
Well, the new calendars. You're making the Gmail joke from back in the day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just weird. There's certain things that are just not Retina based. And it's just like, really? Like somebody can't just go in there and. Anyway,
I really think you have it out for Google, Joe. You just don't seem to like them at all.
I can't get around like my it just doesn't, their interface just doesn't do it for me. It just looks so bad. I don't know. And this other thing, okay, this is a legitimate gripe. So after like my second round where I thought, okay, I've got everything, you know, uploaded and I thought it was all good. And, you know, of course, before I realized things were just randomly missing, the one problem with the result of that was every single event, I'd go into the notes field and every single event started off with dash, colon, colon, tilde, colon, tilde, colon, colon, tilde, colon. And it's, I can go, I feel like I'm Stephen Colbert reading one of Trump's tweets. I'll spare you guys that, you know, where he does like the dot, dot, dot,
right.
Dot, yeah. Dot, dot, you know, it's like, I love that. It's like my favorite part of the whole thing. Dash, colon, colon, tilde, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, please do not edit this section of the description. New line, new line. this event has a Google Hangouts video call, new line, join plus.google.com/hangout/_simac.com/joe.whatever else. So that's like, it's like on every single calendar event. Like
even
every,
now,
like who thought that was a good idea at Google?
Even now.
So yeah, well, okay. So I was going to live with that against like every like bone of my body. Like I just, you know, that's clearly like, that's like a pet peeve of mine. Like don't pollute my calendar with like :// please do not edit this section of the description. Like that's a thing that Google designed, right? Google, somebody at Google was like, all right, we can add this Google Hangouts thing to the calendar. This would be great. Like, we're just going to pollute everyone's notes field with this like series of divider lines. And then please do not edit. Like, that's just so bad. What a terrible, okay. I got to stop. I'm ranting. I was actually tempted, despite the fact that I thought everything was working, I was going to redo it to remove that. And then of course, once I found that, you know, there were things missing from the calendar, I was like, good, we can fix this polluted notes field issue as well, you know, without feeling like I'm going a little crazy here. But the solution is you just go into, there's a setting, you know, the knowledge base in Google is disable automatic video calls in Google Calendar. And then it's like, by default, video calls are automatically added to all Google Calendar events.
Wow.
Administrators can disable this setting. Users, and then it says, I love this line, users must then manually click add a video call every time a Google Calendar event is created. No, they don't, because nobody freaking uses that. What do you mean they have to manually click that? Nobody's going to click hardship. That because nobody
That's
cares.
A hardship right there. Yeah.
Like, I mean, seriously, like, wow. This is Google's attitude. It's like, well, if you turn this off, like, then you're going to have to, like, nobody cares. No, like, I don't know. People must be really wrapped up in the Google, like, world. Like, maybe some people really like this stuff. I don't know. I just, who in their right mind thinks that's a good idea to just put a link to something on every calendar just in case? Like, I don't know.
You got me on board with that.
Thank you. That's why I'm here. I may not
be as angry as you are, but that's...
let's face it. I'm angry enough for both of us. So that's fair.
I could see them doing that on the free version, but you're paying for the product right now. And that's just not right.
And then, you basically uncheck. So under video calls and your sharing settings under G Suite apps, calendars, preferences, whatever, you uncheck this thing, automatically add video calls to events created by a user, which again is checked by default. So you uncheck that. But it doesn't like remove all this pollution from your calendar. It leaves all that crap in the notes field. So the way to undo this, I would have had to basically redo the entire migration after having unchecked that. And I was actually considering doing that because that's how much I can't stand like Google deciding I'm going to put a thing in your notes field on every appointment. Going back historically to 2004, it's like, really? For events in the past, you're adding this thing? Anyway, sorry. I could go on and on about how annoying I find
right,
this
that
stuff.
Makes no sense at all for something that didn't even exist in the past.
There was a Google Hangout for this event in 2004 before the feature existed. Like, what?
Right. Back to the future with Google.
God, right. So anyway, but it's just, yeah. So I was even tempted to do that, but luckily, I guess it didn't work and I had to like, you know, redo the whole migration anyway. So I was able to thankfully get rid of that stuff by redoing it.
Jerry, I think we need to take Joe out for a drink. He sounds highly stressed.
No, but he won, you know?
He won.
Yeah.
Joe versus Google. Joe won. Google nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a triumphant story, Sam. So
I guess.
He needs a slap on the back.
Yeah, thank you guys for appreciating that after all of the effort. It is good. It's like after the end of that, I'm like, isn't it nice to have a syncing calendar, everybody? Like we just have our calendar back. It's just a nice thing to have.
That's why he was given the nickname Tenacious Joe some time ago by me.
Yeah. You did. In the pick of destiny. Right.
So we'd like to talk a little bit about our longtime sponsor of Command Control Power, and that is Watchman Monitoring. If you're an Apple consultant and you're looking for a fundamental tool to start your business, this is the one asset that you want to have in hand and have in your tool belt to start your own consultancy. Watchman Monitoring is a fantastic piece of software. It's a lightweight client that you put on your client machines. It can monitor your server software. So you're running a Daylight server or a Cario server. It monitors and checks backup operations. It makes sure your client machines are backing up. So whether you're running CrashPlan, Carbon Copy Cloner, Backblaze, Watchman Monitoring monitors them all. It checks your client disk drives, RAID systems. It looks for slow network performance. It looks for problems with the system performance of a machine. And you get all these immediate notifications by email when any of your client machines are exhibiting problems. It checks for malware. It's absolutely fantastic.
So just to give a little something to the longtime subscribers of Watchman, because I think most of us are, many of us are anyway, and if you're not, you should definitely check them out at watchmanmonitoring.com/command-control-power. There are some things you should know as a Watchman user. First of all, a new idea had come to me when I was presenting some of my managed services contracts, specifically to a new client. So I've had a couple of cases recently where a client will approach me, a potential new client, and they're interested in working with us, and they're actually looking for something like managed services. It's kind of difficult for me. I don't have a lot of experience writing those contracts and presenting that to a client to figure out how to write the contract. And I realized that like step one is I kind of just need like a litmus test for their entire stable of Macs. It just occurred to me, why not install Watchman Monitoring as step one? Even though this client is not yet on the books, they're not yet, we don't yet have a relationship with them, or maybe we're just doing a little bit of project work, we can install Watchman Monitoring on all of their computers. And that's like a really quick way to do basic discovery of all the machines on their network. You know, you get a nice report of all the machines, serial numbers, specifications, how much RAM is installed, what OS level they're on, and you can just right away see some red flags. And not to mention, you can also immediately give a client an understanding of your benefit, your value, by saying you have five machines with malware, you have, you know, three machines that probably could use a memory upgrade, and there's like six machines that we won't even support because you're running an OS that's way too old. You know, step one is to get these up to date, add RAM, maybe replace these drives with SSDs, and you can easily recap this whole thing just from right from Watchman Monitoring. So, I mean, you can send a link to your client to the Watchman Monitoring installer, just have the end users install it, and it's going to report back to you automatically. You can review that list with your client and say, here's the number of machines I have. These are the users. Is there anybody we're missing? And then you can just summarize that right from the report that you can export right from your dashboard on Watchman Monitoring.
One of the nice things about Watchman Monitoring, too, is they're always adding features. So it's not like you just simply subscribe to the service and that delivery of content that they give you remains the same. They're always upgrading and improving the product, and you still pay the same price. One of the nice things that you had mentioned before, Joe, is when you go into these machine profiles, if you identify a machine that potentially needs upgrades right from the client device profile, you can click a link which will bring you directly to OWC's page. This is Otherworld Computing or MacSales.com. You have all the information you need, the correct RAM that needs to go into this machine, the correct hard drive, any upgrades that you need to do, you can be directed directly from the machine profile through Watchman to Otherworld Computing.
Yeah, it's such a no-brainer. I mean, you know, we all know kind of in the back of our minds, oh, I think this machine uses, you know, 1600 megahertz DDR3 memory or whatever, but you don't need to like double check it or look up the serial number or do anything like that. You literally just click View Upgrades button on the computer overview, and you'll see a page with the specific RAM, the SSDs that qualify, even like in a laptop, the batteries that you can replace the original battery with if you need a new one, including, you know, OWC's kits to replace the SSDs. If you don't have as much experience doing this, it comes with the adapter to put the drive in for data transfer. I mean, it just makes it so easy just to get a link to the exact parts that qualify for this machine. So I think they've done a really good job integrating that. And it's just a great way to add more value to your managed services offering. So I highly recommend Watchman Monitoring. And as we said at the ACES conference, Watchman Monitoring is your gateway to managed services.
So Sam, you went to hell too. What was your private version of hell like?
My own private version of hell. Actually, it wasn't even all that technical, but it was hellish nonetheless. I just came back from a 2-week stint of traveling, and I was in Los Angeles doing some work. Thursday, I was done in Los Angeles. I had two more stops to make on my trip, so I had a whole bunch of equipment with me. And I decided, all right, you know, I don't need to lug this with me to my next two stops, so I'm just going to ship them back home, and I'll scoop them up when I get back. So I close up my equipment. I close it up into my case. I have one of those hard Pelican-like cases, and I have some TSA keys, so I lock it up. I leave the facility I'm in. I'm on my way. On Sunday, I'm on my second leg of my trip, and on Sunday, I am off to Minnesota for the Jamf Nation User Conference. I get out my laptop to do some follow-up work on the things I've been doing the week before, only come to find out that I never copied my data off of the server that I had and that I packed up. right? So
that you needed to complete your job for the company you were working for.
Exactly. So now I open up my laptop on the plane on Sunday and I say, shoot, I didn't have the data I needed. I realized it was on the laptop that I closed up in the case and TSA locked and tucked it away to be shipped. I call up my partner Jay and I said, hey, what's going on with the UPS pickup? And come to find out, they were supposed to pick it up Friday, but they never did. So I said, great. I mean, it's still at the facility. I am going to find a way to get that data off because I really need it. I have a tight deadline. I coordinate. This is different time zones because I'm now in Minnesota. And I coordinate a key of one of my TSA keys to be sent back to LA so that the guy there can open up the case for me. So I call them in the morning and he goes, oh, you know, first thing this morning, UPS came and picked up the case.
Oh, man.
I was like, I was like, crap. So I'm like, okay. I start making a bunch of phone calls. Meanwhile, I'm supposed to be in sessions and things like that. Talk to a bunch of different supervisors and they're like, okay, we'll have the driver go back around and bring the case back because truth be told, because they didn't pick it up on time, they were supposed to ship it 3 day now instead of ground. And they said, we have to bring it back to you anyway because it needs new labels. Great. You'll bring it back to me on Monday, later on this day, and I'll do my thing. I'll get my data off. So Monday comes and goes. They never show up. They never came back. Oh, crap. That sucks. Tuesday morning, I wake up. I start making some calls. Where's my case? Oh, the driver never brought it back? No, he didn't. So they're like, oh, we've traced it back to this facility that's only 0.9 miles away from where you were. So now I have a TSA key that was FedEx overnight back to them that's doing no good. Wow. Talk to the guy at the facility and I say, hey, listen, bud, I'll compensate for you for your time, but I need you to go to this UPS facility and pick up my case because they won't bring it back to us, right? So he goes, okay, I can go around 3 o'clock. I'll do it for you, no problem. So around 3 o'clock comes, he says, I'm going to call the facility, make sure that it's ready for me. So he calls and then he calls me back. He goes, they said it was there, but it's not. I'm like, okay, this is a nightmare. And I'm starting to freak out. So I call them. They're like, yeah, they said it was scanned in here, but we can't find it. What do you mean you can't find it? And obviously I'm laughing now. So we have a happy ending, but I was freaking out at this point because I have 13 MacBook Pros or MacBook Airs in that case. And they say, oh, we see it. It's got scanned and went to another facility in California, and it's about to go on ground shipment to Connecticut. I said, stop that freaking case. I need that data. The day comes and goes. They still can't find it. The next day, even though it had no departure scan, it's on a trailer, and we cannot interrupt that trailer because there are 3,000 other packages. You're going to have to wait till it gets to Connecticut.
Oh, man.
All right, so this is a bad day. This makes my week really crappy. I'm like pretty pissed off. I'm missing a deadline, all this other stuff.
Can you speak to the magnitude just for our listeners without showing your hand of why this was so important you got this data?
Let's just say that many other people besides me relied on this data.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I have to wait. It was supposed to be there Friday. Friday comes and goes, doesn't. So Monday comes along and I call up first thing Monday morning. I'm now back home and my case is nowhere to be found.
Wow.
And they say it's because it's on a trailer across the country. Meanwhile, I had a separate smaller case with iPads that arrived already. So, and they were supposed to be together. So now I'm super nervous because one came and the other one didn't. So Monday comes, I talk to yet another supervisor and she goes, okay, I don't know why it's saying this, but it says it's supposed to arrive Tuesday, but this package is lost. Whoa, lady. I'm like, back up a second here. I'm like, what do you mean lost? She goes, there are scans on here that show that it never made it onto the truck. It's not going to be there when you expect it to tomorrow. Holy crap. Like, not only do I have all of this $15,000 worth of equipment, I have data that's nowhere else in the world that's sitting there. My day is spent back and forth calling different people, blah, blah, blah. Finally, Tuesday morning comes along. I wake up fully expecting to start making some more calls. I open up deliveries and it says, arrival scan, Norwalk, Connecticut. Holy crap. I put on my clothes. I had to take my son to school. I'm like, buddy, we're going for a ride. And I go to the facility. And so I go there and they're like, it's about to go on a truck out for delivery. I'm like, stop that freaking thing because I'm here. Right. And they're like, well, you should have called earlier. I had my son next to me. I was like about to flip out at these people. So I stay calm. To put a cherry on top of this whole story, they finally find, it takes like 20 minutes. They finally start rolling it out towards me. They say to meet them over by the garage door. I see it. It's in my sights, right? And the woman wheels it out because it's too heavy to carry. do you have a business card? And she's very rude to me. What do you mean? I'm like, what do you mean? Doesn't have your name on it. You can't pick it up if you don't have your business card. So I run to my car, get my card. I literally like throw it on the case because I was so pissed. What about your license? I'm like, what about it? You didn't ask me for it. So now like I'm pissed at her, you know. I throw it on my license. She finally gives it to me. We have a happy ending to this story. That whole thing, although non-technical, was probably one of the worst weeks of my entire life. Never ship UPS. That's the moral of the story.
I thought you were going to say always back up your – I'm sorry. I shouldn't even bring this up.
Rub salt in the wound.
I know, right? Oh, man.
By the way, that's usually part of my process.
I'm sure.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it because I thought I was bringing that server with me. I planned on putting it in my backpack. At my next stop, I'll do some work. Meanwhile, I should have copied it on site. But anyway – It started with my fault. It's not, you know, we won't avoid that, right? But
yeah, but it's easy to see how that could happen.
I decided last minute I didn't need my server for my next stop. I forgot that I didn't copy data. So I chucked it in the case and I locked it. That sealed my fate right there.
Wow.
Pretty awful. I mean, we've all gone through these like real kooky stories with UPS, you know, and stuff gets, they say it's lost and then it shows up. Beyond the value of the contents, the biggest thing I think that was weighing on you was the data, because you, like you said, the data that was on there affected many other people. There were a lot of eyes that were looking for this and on this. So did this extreme amount of pressure on you. Forget about the laptops. I mean, you know, those can be replaced. Insurance will replace them. You know, that's inconsequential. But what was consequential was just getting the data off. And that was the biggest stress component here, I think.
Oh, man, dude. And it started with, you know, obviously, like I said, me not copying it off. But in the end, all these things just happened to snowball.
Yeah, perfect storm.
Yeah, it was. So I couldn't fully enjoy JNUC as much as I wanted to. At least yesterday was a great day in my life. My long national nightmare was over.
That's fantastic. Wow. That it had a happy ending. Yeah, it's easy to see how you normally have a workflow and you kind of made an exception in this case, then you change your mind and it's like you don't have kind of like a built-in double check in that process. It would have reminded you, oh, then I do need to copy the data, you know, in that case, or you know what I mean? Like you just kind of, it's easy to see how you could get into that mess, but then like the UPS like compounding it by telling you, it's over here. No, it's over there. Hold on. I had a trip a few years ago across the country. I arrived and I'm waiting for my bag and waiting for my bag and waiting for my bag. And, you know, I'm the last one waiting for his bag. And I go over to like place you go if there's no bag. And it was like a flight operated by a different airline. It was like Delta flight operated by American or vice versa or whatever. They were giving me information. It reminds me of this story because, it looks like your bag is in Las Vegas. Why? You know, like I'm not in Las Vegas. Like why did it get put on the wrong plane? Like what even happens there? You know, then they like updated the information. They're like, oh no, it's actually in LA. How do you not know? You know? And then they're like, well, this actually shows this is for like a different flight and blah, blah, blah. Like apparently they reuse some of the numbers and things. And this uncertainty though, of like not really having definitive info. And they're like telling you one thing with confidence and then like they're wrong. And it's just like, okay, somebody find my stuff, you know, like what you, like it's right. That feeling of like no one even knows what the answer is. Like that's rough, man. Wow.
No idea how many people I yelled at.
Yeah. And just like the fact that you're like Jerry said, you know, it's not the cost of the replacement value of the equipment. It's the cost of the data, but it's also like the cost to your reputation. If like you're
exactly,
you know, it's like what's the reason? What's the explanation that you lost the data? It's like, whatever the reason is, you know, like you just know you've had this feeling like it just seems like it's not going to look good, you know?
Yeah, it's a bad way of everybody getting to know your name. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, that guy with the data problem a couple years ago.
Oh, you're the guy. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we've heard about you.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, I'm so glad that ended well. And you probably have updated your procedures to accommodate any kind of possible.
Goes right to Dropbox.
Yeah, exactly.
Goes right to Dropbox. Right.
It keeps reminding me of Apple. Craig Federighi doing the iPhone X Face ID demo in the keynote, and you know, he grabs the iPhone. He's like, Face ID works so great. It's so reliable and secure. And he's like looking at it. Nothing's happening. Nothing's happening. And he's that's a bad demo. And he like goes to the backup phone and it works, of course, you know. But the problem was like in their testing, probably as they go through the presentation 100 times, they don't have the guy come out and like wipe down the devices. I imagine that they're not actually cleaning the devices between each test of like their walk through their presentation. And, you know, as he explained on a podcast recently, the story was online as well.
Sam, I'm wondering how he's going to tie this into your story. Keep going, Joe. Go ahead.
The problem was, right, they set everything up. They lay out the phones. They get the phones ready to go through the demo. So they're in the state where their passcode unlock has been done. Now it's ready for Craig's face ID, right? At some point before the live presentation, somebody comes out and like wipes down all the devices. With face ID, if the phone thinks somebody's trying to look at it and unlock it and it's not you, after a certain number of failed attempts, it goes back to like where you need your passcode. It goes into passcode lock. My point here in tying this in is that like
here we go.
You have to test it in a real world scenario to like know exactly what your process needs to be to get it 100% right on day one in the live presentation. You almost have to go through it and literally do everything you're going to do in the actual presentation in your demos. Because if Apple had had the guy come out with the white gloves and wipe the thing down, they would have said, oh, shoot, you know, that's going to cause us to be locked out of our Face ID demo. Like, we better, you know, not have him do that. You know,
yeah, there's got to be some scientific word for what happened there, you know, in the process of proving out theories and things like that in this in the science world. There must be a... That's the so-and-so gotcha. You know?
Right. I Occam's razor or one of those.
Right. One of those types of things. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know how it relates exactly to Sam. But
I have no idea how it relates to Sam. I think
it's still a good story nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, Joe wanted to tell the Craig Federighi story.
It reminds me of that because it's like you get into this situation where Sam, you like deviated from your normal workflow slightly.
Yeah.
And it seemed like inconsequential, like that you would, enough. You know, do things
so
different.
He didn't wipe down the MacBook Airs, you're saying? Is that what happened?
Like the cleaning part? I don't know.
It didn't recognize my face. And then I couldn't get the data off.
Yeah.
Blame it on Face ID.
Well, just like we introduced hosted mail companies to Joe earlier in the show, we tell Sam about USB keys, how neat they are, you know, because you can put data on them and take them with you and put them in your pocket.
You guys are jerks. I'm all smiles today. Let me tell you, man, 2 days ago, I would have been done for.
Oh, what a relief. It's almost like worth going through the craziness because you're just at the end. You're like, whatever.
Oh, no, it's not.
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
All right, let me ask you this, Sam. What would you have rather done, gone through what you just went through or do the Joe's Mail migration with the calendars?
Well, I would have volunteered for Joe's calendar migration.
All right, that puts it in perspective.
It wasn't any point in time where I thought, well, I've lost everything potentially, or like I knew if anything, worst case, it was like more hours of my time to make it right, you know.
Jerry, have you been to hell and back this week?
No, because I don't get any work. And I'm a happy guy.
Oh, man. If that's what it takes, I'm all in.
So thanks again to Watchman Monitoring for sponsoring this week's Command Control Power. And check out Watchman Monitoring at watchmanmonitoring.com/commandcontrolpower.